This is the reading of G. Iger Jeff's second series of All and Everything, Meetings with Remarkable Men. We continue with Chapter 1, Introduction. Mr. Gurdjieff has been explaining the problems with contemporary literature. And as regards the other branches of European literature, such as the scientific, the descriptive, and other forms of instructive exposition, the Asiatic, having lost to a lesser degree the ability to feel, that is to say, standing closer to nature, half-consciously feels and instinctively senses the writer's complete lack of any knowledge of reality and of any genuine understanding of the subject he is writing about. And so because of all this, the Asiatic people, after first manifesting a great interest in European literature, gradually stopped paying any attention to it, and at the present time, disregard it completely, whereas among European peoples, the shelves of their public and private libraries and bookshops are groaning from the daily increasing number of new books. The question must doubtly arise in many of you as to how what I have just said can be reconciled with the fact that an overwhelming majority of the people of Asia are illiterate in the strict sense of the word. And to this I will answer that nevertheless the real cause of the lack of interest in contemporary literature lies in its own shortcomings. I myself have seen how hundreds of illiterate people will gather round one literate man to hear a reading of the sacred writings or of the tales known as the Thousand and One Nights. You will, of course, reply that the events described, particularly in these tales, are taken from their own life and are therefore understandable and interesting to them. But that is not the point. These texts, and I speak particularly of the Thousand and One Nights, are works of literature in the full sense of the word. Anyone reading or hearing this book feels clearly that everything in it is fantasy, but fantasy corresponding to truth, even though composed of episodes which are quite improbable for the ordinary life of people. The interest of the reader or listener is awakened and enchanted by the author's fine understanding of the psyche of people of all walks of life around him. He follows with curiosity how, little by little, the whole story is formed out of these small incidents of actual life. The requirements of contemporary civilization have engendered yet another quite specific form of literature called journalism. I cannot pass by in silence this new form of literature, since, aside from the fact that it offers nothing whatsoever for the development of the mind, it has, from my point of view, become the fundamental evil in the life of people today because of the poisonous influence it exerts on their mutual relations. This form of literature has become very widespread in recent times because, according to my unshakable conviction, it answers more completely than anything else to the weaknesses and demands which lead to the ever-increasing will-lessness of man. It thus accelerates in people the atrophy of even their last possibilities for acquiring those data which formerly still gave them a certain relative cognizance of their own individuality, which alone leads to what we call remembering oneself, that absolutely necessary factor in the process of self-perfecting. Besides, owing to this unprincipled daily literature, the thinking function of people has come to be even further separated from their individuality, and thereby conscience, which was occasionally awakened in them, has now ceased to participate in this thinking of theirs. They are thus deprived of those factors which formerly gave people a more or less tolerable life, if only in respect of their mutual relations. To our common misfortune, this journalistic literature, which is becoming more widespread in the life of people year by year, weakens the already weakened mind of man still more by laying it open without resistance to all kinds of deceit and delusion, and leads it astray from relatively well-founded thinking, thus stimulating in people, instead of sane judgment, various unworthy properties such as incredulity, indignation, fear, false shame, hypocrisy, pride, and so on and so forth. In order to portray to you more concretely all the maleficence for people of this new form of literature, I will tell you about several events which took place on account of newspapers the reality of which was for me beyond all doubt, as by chance I had personally taken part in them. In Tehran, I had a certain close friend, an Armenian, who some time before his death had made me his executor. He had a son, no longer young, who, on account of his business, lived with his numerous family in a large European city. One sad evening, after having eaten their supper, he and the members of his family all fell ill and died before morning. As executor for the family, I was obliged to go to the place where this tragic event had occurred. I found out that just before this event, the father of this unfortunate family had read long articles for several days in succession in one of the various newspapers he received about a butcher shop where, according to these articles, special sausages were made from genuine products in some particular way. At the same time, he kept coming across large advertisements of this new butcher shop in all the newspapers. Finally, all this so tempted him that, although neither he nor his family cared for sausages very much, as all of them had been raised in Armenia, where sausages are not eaten, he went and bought some. And having had these sausages for supper that same evening, all the family were mortally poisoned. My suspicions having been aroused by this extraordinary occurrence, I succeeded a little later, with the cooperation of an agent of the private secret police, in bringing to light the following. Some large firm had acquired, at a low price from an export concern, an enormous consignment of sausages, originally destined for a foreign country, which had been rejected owing to a delay in shipment. To get rid of the entire consignment as quickly as possible, this firm spared no expense on reporters, to whom it entrusted this maleficent campaign in the newspapers. Another occurrence. During one of my stays in Baku, I myself, for several days in succession, read in the local newspapers obtained by my nephew lengthy articles taking up nearly half the entire paper, which went into ecstasies about the marvels performed by some famous actress. So much was written about her, and in such a handsome way, that even I, an old man, was, as is said, fired by it all, and one evening, putting off everything I had to do and changing my established evening regime, I went to the theater to see this wonder. And what do you think I saw? Something corresponding even in the slightest to what had been written about her in these articles which filled up half the paper? Nothing of the sort. I had seen in my day many representatives of this art, both the good and the bad, and without exaggeration I can say that for some time I had been considered a great authority on these matters. But even without taking into consideration my personal views on art in general, and speaking merely from an ordinary standpoint, I must confess that in all my life I had never seen anybody to compare with this celebrity for lack of talent and absence of even the most elementary notions of the principles of playing a role. In all her manifestations on the stage, there was such a complete lack of any kind of presence that I personally, even if aroused to altruism, would not have permitted such a wonder to fill the role of kitchen maid in my kitchen. As I afterwards learned, one of the typical oil refiners of Baku, who happened to make a fortune, had paid several reporters a good round sum as a bribe, promising to double it if they should succeed in making a celebrity of his private lady love, who up till then had been chambermaid in the house of a Russian engineer, and whom he had seduced, taking advantage of business appointments with this engineer. One more example. In a widely circulated German newspaper I read, from time to time, lofty panegyrics glorifying a certain painter, and owing to these articles I formed the opinion that in contemporary art this painter was simply a phenomenon. My nephew, having just built a house in the town of Baku, had decided, in preparation for his wedding, to decorate the interior very richly. Since twice that year he had unexpectedly struck oil with signs of increasing output, which would assure him a considerable fortune, I advised him not to spare his money, but to send for that famous painter to superintend the decoration of the house and to paint some frescoes on the walls. In this way, his expenditures, already very great, would at least be of benefit to his posterity, who would inherit these frescoes and other works by the hand of this incomparable master. And my nephew did so. He even went himself to invite this great European painter. And soon afterwards the painter arrived, bringing with him a whole train of assistants, artisans, and even, it seemed to me, his own harem, of course in the European sense of the word, and without the slightest hurry he finally set to work. The result of the work of this celebrity was that, firstly, the day of the wedding had to be postponed, and secondly, no little money had to be spent to bring everything back to its original state, so that simple Persian artisans might decorate, paint, and embellish everything in a way more corresponding to genuine artistry. In the present case, to give them their due, the reporters participated in building up the career of this mediocre painter almost disinterestedly, simply as comrades and modest sideline workers. As a last example, I will tell you a sad story of misunderstanding, which was due this time to a big shot of this contemporary, especially pernicious literature. One day, when I was living in the town of Khorasan, I met at the house of mutual acquaintances a young European couple, and soon got to know them rather well. They came to Khorasan several times, but each time only for a short stay. Traveling with his young wife, this new friend of mine was collecting all kinds of information in many countries and making analyses to determine the effects of the nicotine in various kinds of tobacco on the human organism and psyche. After collecting the data he needed on this question in several Asiatic countries, he returned with his wife to Europe, where he began to write a long book on the results of his research. But since his young wife, obviously owing to her youth and inexperience as regards the necessity of preparing for what are called rainy days, had spent all their resources during these travels of theirs, she was compelled, in order to give her husband the possibility of finishing his book, to take employment as a typist in the office of a large publishing house. There often came to this office a certain literary critic who met her there, and having, as is said, falling in love with her, tried, simply for the satisfaction of his lust, to get on intimate terms with her, but she, an honorable wife who knew her duty, would not yield to his advances. But while, in this faithful wife of a European husband, morality continued to triumph, there was nourished in this loathsome contemporary type, in proportion to the non-satisfaction of his lust, the desire for vengeance usual in such people. And by all sorts of intrigues, he succeeded in getting her dismissed from her employment for no reason whatsoever. Then, when her husband, my young friend, had finished his book and published it, this specific ulcer of our times, because of his resentment, began to write in the newspaper to which he contributed, and also in other newspapers and periodicals, a whole series of articles containing all sorts of false statements which discredited the book so completely that it was a total failure. That is to say, no one became interested in it or bought it. And so, thanks to one of these unconscionable representatives of this unprincipled literature, things came to pass that this honest worker and his beloved wife, having spent their last resources and not having even the wherewithal to buy bread by mutual pact, hanged themselves. From my point of view, these literary critics, owing to the influence of their authority as writers on the general mass of naive and easily suggestible people, are a thousand times more pernicious than all the slobbering boy reporters. I myself know a music critic who had never once in his life touched a musical instrument, and therefore had no practical understanding of music. He did not even know what sound was in general, or the difference between the notes do and re. But, owing to the established abnormalities of contemporary civilization, he somehow occupied the responsible post of music critic, and thus became an authority for all the readers of a well-established and widely circulated newspaper. And it was, of course, according to his quite illiterate indications, that unshakable opinions were formed in all his readers on the question of music, that question which should in reality be like a beacon light for the correct understanding of one of the aspects of truth. The public never knows who is writing. It knows only the newspaper itself, which belongs to a group of experienced businessmen. What the person writing in these papers really knows, or what is going on behind the scenes in the newspaper office, the readers never know, but take everything written in the papers at its face value. According to my conviction, which has finally become as firm as a rock, and anyone thinking more or less impartially will come to the same conclusion, It is chiefly owing to this journalistic literature that any man who tries to develop by the means available in contemporary civilization acquires a thinking faculty adequate, at the very most, for the first invention of Edison, and in respect of emotionality develops in himself, as Mullinasa Eden would say, the fineness of feeling of a cow. The leaders of contemporary civilization themselves, standing on a very low level of moral and psychic development, are incapable, like children playing with fire, of knowing the force and significance of the effect of such literature on the mass of the people. According to my impression obtained from the study of ancient history, the leaders of former civilizations would never have allowed such an abnormality to continue for so long. This opinion of mine may be confirmed by authentic information, which has come down to us about the serious attitude towards daily literature taken by the rulers of our country not so long ago, in the period when it was considered one of the greatest nations, namely, when Great Babylon belonged to us and was the sole center of culture recognized by everyone on earth. According to this information, a daily press also existed there, in the form of what are called printed papyri, although, of course, in an incomparably smaller quantity than now. But at that time, those who participated in such literary organs were only elderly and qualified persons, known to all for their serious merits and honorable lives, and there was even an established rule for appointing such men to these positions under oath, and they were therefore called sworn collaborators, just as now there are sworn juries, sworn experts, and so on. But nowadays any whipper-snapper can be a journalist, so long as he knows how to express himself prettily and, as is said, literarily. I became particularly well acquainted with the psyche and could in general evaluate the being of these products of contemporary civilization who fill the newspapers and periodicals with their various wiseacrings when for 3 or 4 months in that same town of Baku I happened to be present every day at their gatherings and to exchange opinions with them. This occurred in the following circumstances. Once, when I had gone to Baku with the intention of staying all winter with my nephew, several young persons came to him and asked his permission for their new society of literati and journalists to hold meetings in one of the large rooms on the ground floor of his house in which he had originally intended to establish a restaurant. My nephew at once gave his consent, and from the next day on, these young people assembled, chiefly in the evenings, for they, as they called them, general meetings and learned debates. Outsiders were admitted to these meetings, and I often went to listen to their discussions, as I was quite free in the evenings, and my quarters were very near the room where they assembled. Several soon of them began to converse with me, and friendly relations were gradually established between us. Most of them were still quite young, weak, and effeminate, and the faces of some showed clearly that their parents must have been drunkards, or had suffered from other passions through willlessness, or that the possessors themselves of these faces had various bad habits concealed from others. Although Baku is only a small town in comparison with most of the large cities of today, and although the contemporary types who were assembled there represented at the most low-flying birds, I have no hesitation in generalizing about all of their colleagues everywhere. And I feel I have the right to do this, because later, when traveling in Europe, I often happen to come in contact with the representatives of this modern literature, and they all made the same impression on me, resembling one another like peas in a pod. And the only difference between them was in the degree of their importance, depending upon which literary organs they contributed to, that is, depending upon the reputation and circulation of the newspaper or periodical in which their wiseacrings found a place, or upon the soundness of the commercial firm which owned both the given organ and all of them, the literary workmen. Many of them, for some reason or other, are called poets. At the present time, anywhere in Europe, anyone who writes even a short piece of nonsense of the order of green roses, purple mimosas, divine are her poses, like hanging memories, and so on, is awarded the appellation of poet by those around him, and some of them even engrave this title on their visiting cards. Among these contemporary journalists and writers, esprit de corps is somehow highly developed, and they strongly support and immoderately extol one another on all occasions. It seems to me that this feature of theirs is the chief cause of their spreading sphere of influence and of their false authority over the masses, and also of the unconscious and servile adulation with which the crowd bows down before these nullities, as with a clear conscience one can call them. At the meetings in Baku which I have mentioned, one of them would go to the platform and begin to read something of the order of the verses I have just quoted, or speak about why the minister of some nation had expressed himself during a banquet concerning some question or other in such a way, and not otherwise, and then the lecturer would in most cases finish his speech by making an announcement more or less as follows. I now yield the platform to an incomparable luminary of the learning of our time, Mr. So-and-so, who by chance has come to our city on particularly important business, and has been so kind as not to refuse to come to our meeting today. We will now have the privilege of listening to his enchanting voice with our own ears. And when this celebrity would appear on the platform, he would begin his speech with these words. My dear ladies and gentlemen, my colleague has been so modest as to call me a celebrity. It must be said here that he could not have heard what his colleague had said, since he had come in from another room to which the door had been closed, and he had opened it himself when he came in, and I knew very well the acoustics in that house and the solidity of the doors. Then he would continue. As a matter of fact, in comparison with him, I am not worthy even to sit in his presence. The celebrity is not I, but he. He is known not only everywhere in all our great Russia, but throughout the whole civilized world. Posterity will pronounce his name with palpitation, and no one will ever forget what he has done for learning and the future welfare of mankind. This god of truth is at present in this insignificant town, not by chance, as it may appear to us, but doubtless for very important reasons known only to himself. In reality, his place is not among us, but beside the ancient gods of Olympus, and so on and so forth. And only after such a preamble would this new celebrity pronounce several absurdities, as for example on the theme, Why the Sirikitsi Made War on the Parnakalpi. After these learned sessions, suppers were always served with two bottles of cheap wine, and many hid in their pockets some bit of hors d'oeuvre, either a piece of sausage or a herring with a piece of bread, and if by chance anyone else noticed this, they would usually say, This is for my dog. The rascal already has the habit. Always expects something when I return home late. On the day after these suppers, an account of the meeting always appeared in all the local papers, written in an incredibly pompous style, and the speeches were more or less accurately quoted, but of course no mention was made of the modesty of the supper, or of the making off with a piece of sausage for the dog. Such are the people who write in the papers about all sorts of truths and scientific discoveries, and the naive reader, who does not see them or know their lives, draws his conclusions about events and ideas from the empty words of these writers, who are neither more nor less than ill, inexperienced, and illiterate, as far as human life is concerned. In all the cities of Europe, with very few exceptions, the writers of books or newspaper articles are just such immature scatterbrains, who have become what they are owing chiefly to their heredity and their specific weaknesses. From my point of view, there can be no doubt whatsoever that of all the causes of the many abnormalities of contemporary civilization, the principal and most obvious one is this same journalistic literature owing to its demoralizing and pernicious effect on the psyche of people. It astonishes me extremely that not a single government among all the peoples of contemporary civilization has ever become aware of this, and that not one of them, although expending more than half of what are called the government revenues on the maintenance of police, prisons, judicial establishments, churches, hospitals, etc., and on paying numerous civil employees, such as priests, physicians, agents of the secret police, public prosecutors, propagandists, and the like, for the sole purpose of maintaining the fidelity and morality of its citizens, spends a single cent on undertaking something or other in order to destroy at its root this obvious cause of many crimes and misunderstandings. Thus ended the speech of this elderly, intelligent Persian. And so, my brave reader, who is perhaps already standing with one foot in galoshes as I have finished with this speech, which I tacked on here only because, from my point of view, the ideas expressed in it could be very instructive and useful, especially for those adorers of contemporary civilization who naively consider it immeasurably higher than former civilizations in respect of the perfecting of human reason, I can now conclude this introduction and pass on to the reworking of the material intended for this series of my writings. In beginning to rewrite this material with the intention of giving it a form as understandable as possible and accessible to all, the thought has arisen in me that this work of mine should also be carried out in accordance with the very sensible counsel for living, often employed by our great Mullernasa Eden and expressed by him thus: always and in everything strive to attain, at the same time, what is useful for others and what is pleasant for oneself. As regards carrying out the first half of this very sensible counsel of our wise teacher, I have nothing to be concerned about, since the ideas I intend to introduce in this series will themselves abundantly fulfill it. But as regards what is pleasant for myself, this I wish to attain by giving to the pre-designated material a form of exposition which, from now on, will make my existence in some respects more bearable among the people who meet me than the one I had before my activity as a writer. In order that you may understand what I wish to convey by the expression bearable existence, it must be said that, after all my travels in those countries of the continents of Asia and Africa, which for some reason or other in the last 50 years have come to interest many people, I have long been reputed to be a sorcerer and an expert in questions of the beyond. And in consequence of this, everyone who met me considered that he had the right to disturb me for the satisfaction of his idle curiosity concerning these questions of the beyond, or to compel me to relate something or other of my personal life or some incident of my travels. And no matter how tired I might be, I was obliged to answer something, as otherwise people became offended and, feeling ill-disposed towards me, would always, whenever my name was mentioned, say something to harm my activities and belittle my significance. That is why, in revising the material destined for this series, I have decided to present it in the form of separate independent tales and to insert in them various ideas which can serve as answers to all the questions often put to me, so that if I should again have to deal with these shameless idlers, I may simply refer them to this or that chapter, whereby they can satisfy their automatic curiosity. And this, at the same time, will give me the possibility of conversing with some of them merely by the flow of associations, as is habitual to them, and will also sometimes provide a necessary breathing space for my active thinking, which is inevitably required in the conscious and conscientious fulfillment of my life obligations. Of the questions often put to me by people of various classes and different degrees of informedness, the following, as I recall, recurred most frequently. What remarkable men have I met? What marvels have I seen in the East? Has man a soul, and is it immortal? Is the will of man free? What is life, and why does suffering exist? Do I believe in the occult and spiritualistic sciences? What are hypnotism, magnetism, and telepathy? How did I become interested in these questions? What led me to my system practiced in the institute bearing my name? So I shall now arrange this series in separate chapters, serving as answers to the first of the enumerated questions, namely, what remarkable men have I met? I will distribute in the separate tales about these meetings, according to a principle of logical sequence, all the ideas and thoughts that I intend to make known in this series, in order that they may serve as preparatory constructive material, and at the same time, I will answer all the other questions often asked me. Furthermore, I shall arrange these separate tales in such an order that, among other things, there may stand out distinctly the outline of my, as it were, autobiography. Before going further, I consider it necessary to explain exactly the expression "a remarkable man," since like all expressions for definite notions, it is always understood among contemporary people in a relative, that is, a purely subjective sense. For example, a man who does tricks is for many people a remarkable man, but even for them he ceases to be remarkable as soon as they learn the secret of his tricks. As a definition of who may be considered and called remarkable, I will simply say, for the present, to cut a long story short, to what men I personally apply this expression. From my point of view, he can be called a remarkable man, who stands out from those around him by the resourcefulness of his mind, and who knows how to be restrained in the manifestations which proceed from his nature, at the same time conducting himself justly and tolerantly towards the weaknesses of others. Since the first such man I knew, whose influence left its trace on the whole of my life, was my father, I shall begin with him.
Thank you.